This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 4019 for Thursday, the 28th of December 2023. Today's show is entitled Fairy Lights and Powerful Pixies. It is hosted by Ken Fallon and is about 78 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, Ken is visited by the ghost of procrastination, desperation, and rambling.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. I'm recording this on Christmas Eve 2023. I started my first edit of this, or first attempt to record this, nearly 2 years ago, at which time I drew the diagrams that I'm going to be possibly referring to on the whiteboard. I need to do it tonight, and I'm doing it slightly differently to normally do, by just recording it as I go along in Audacity. I'm going to do a truncate silence, but other than that, I'm not going to do anything more. The reason I need to do this is that I need to save Christmas for somebody. One member of the family has some fairy lights, cheap ones that you get in the Action over here, which is like a pound store or something. And they run off two batteries. And I want to convert it so that you can plug it into a USB wall wart thing. So that's the reason it needs to be done tonight. Want some tea? Rooibos, if you're interested. As I said, I'm recording this just in Audacity, stream of consciousness. We'll see how it goes on as I go along. I've tried recording this many times. They've all failed. I guess hit by the ghost of procrastination on Christmas Eve. What could be more hackery than that? So I'm down here in my office basement thing where the washing is and where I work normally. And I have here in a bag, this is actually this fairy light thing only broke recently, as in this year. So I said I would fix it for them this year, but the show itself has been on the board for a while because I have converted already a lot of Christmas lights to use AC power, so I don't have to go around and change the batteries. So yes, you can say thank you very much, Ken. By the time this comes out, it will be the 27th and you're too late for Christmas. Or the other way of looking at it is that you are perfectly in time for next Christmas. So you have the maximum amount of time between now and Christmas 2024 to get all your lights converted. So actually, this is a good little project to do before you put all the Christmas decorations away. And it used to really drive me nuts going around every evening turning off the power to all the little Christmas village that I got. So I already did a show about converting that. So, okay, as you can tell, I'm trying to put off doing this show. So this LED light thing, let me actually put it into here. So I've got a plastic carton. It's an injection PTFE. Is it PTFE? No, polypropylene. See-through jar that they have Yodokuk, which translates as Jewish cookies. And they're immensely durable. They're about like, let me see, 6 inches high, or 160 mil or something, by 4 inches wide, 10 centimeters. Very durable, like, you know, copy type plastic beaker type thing. So what I'll do is I'll put the lights in there for safekeeping. It'll also make a nice effect. The string is of, you know what, I could take a photo. Did I have camera? Yeah. Let's line these up. They're currently strung out because they went into a bit of a ball. So I'll roll them up kind of carefully and pop them into this container. Then I'll take one photo. I don't want to be doing too many photos or Dave will go nuts. Now they're into a knot again. Which is a nice effect in itself, but not what I'm going for right now. Okay, so stuff them in there. And I'll take a photo of that. So, two photos taken. What we have here are little... A few moments later. Actually, quite a few moments later. And I was talking to the person I'm doing this for. So, yeah. This thing has got two wires running down. And about... let's see... And every 10 centimeters, 4 inches, there's a plastic injection molded star. Little white injector, most transparent injection molded plastic item. And just looking here on the magnifying glass. And joining between the two is a little LED light. Speaking of lights, I'll put on my desk LED lamp. Get a better look at it, and it looks like it's just a surface mounted LED light that is surface mounted LED that's joining the two wires in parallel. So you got a top wire and a bottom wire, and all along you've got small little square LEDs that you will find on a flat printed circuit board attached. And then they probably put the wire insulation on afterwards, flooded the whole thing. So, kind of nice. Nice effect. So, what does that tell us? They're cut here. They basically broke off. They are 40 LED pairs in that bunch. And then they come down to a battery pack. And the battery pack has an on-off button. It's quite a nice little battery pack, and the name of the brand is Sirius. It is conforming to EU regulations because it's got a screw. That's interesting. It's got a screw over the battery pack so that it can't be opened by kids. However, if you just push back the tab, it opens. Fantastic. Love that. Okay, now what I'm seeing here are two batteries. Yep. I'm not going to say anything about what type of batteries they are as yet. So what we have here is an opportunity to discuss AC, DC electricity, voltages, current, power, all that sort of stuff. Even Ohm's law and power calculations. So don't get freaked out. It's easy enough to follow along. And this project, by the way, I just happen to be repairing this and converting it from battery pack to a wall wart. But you don't need, I'll be using solder here, soldering iron. You don't need soldering iron. You can just do this, twist the wires, put some sellotape, double-sided, sticky back plastic, as they used to say on Blue Peter on the BBC. And that's close enough for jazz, yeah? When you're doing that, if you're joining ever two wires, you don't want the positive and the negative to touch. You don't want the two wires to cross because then a lot of electricity flows between the two. So if you're doing that sort of trick where you're joining it with elastic tape, make the cuts so that they're not together. Leave an inch or 2.5 centimeters in between the joints. So cut the top one, long and short, and cut the bottom one short and long, and then they're offset, so you can sellotape them together. That if one of the wires sticks out through the sellotape, it hits the insulation of the other strand rather than the uninsulated, rather than a little wire if it comes out on the other side. So that's a little tip. All this entire thing can be done without soldering iron or tools. So basically, that's all we need. Now, your battery pack, you're gonna go down to the pound store, dollar store, and pick up, or euro store, I guess, euro store. Not to be confused with a train that goes from the continent to the UK. So you got the pack, and these battery packs, you need to be able to open them. So you open the battery pack, it's thing number one, and you take out whatever batteries happen to be in there. So I did a show on batteries earlier, but we'll continue on. Now, typical battery pack has got a spring on one side, and on the other side there's a piece of flat metal, and then the other compartment has got a spring, and on the other side there's a piece of flat metal. So that's this one. However, over here I've got a bag of these little projects that still need to be done. And if we examine the battery packs of some of these other ones, here, this one here has got three of those plastic things in it. So three different compartments. But in all of them, the spring corresponds with a flat piece. The flat piece is connected to another piece that's got a spring. Then back to the other side, it's got a flat piece. Flat piece is connected one with a spring, and the spring connects to the flat piece at the back. So what's going on here? Very interesting, very interesting. So that one we'll keep out. And then the other ones are just variations of either a three compartment or a two compartment. So, interesting. It's like we're investigating a crime here. But what we are actually investigating, we're trying to figure out several different things. So, we know that this is direct current because that's what a battery provides. So, what does that mean? Well, one of the reasons for the show getting delayed so long is that if you ask that question, it leads to a huge, big rabbit hole, ending up with lots and lots of answers. So let's avoid all those for now and just assume that you have a whole go of electrons, your little pixies, as Big Clive says, one of the YouTubers I follow to learn this stuff. They're all lined up in a row, right? And they're queuing up for Santa, yeah? And as one steps forward, the next steps forward, and as the other one steps forward, the next steps forward. And they're going actually really, really slow, like, yeah. But they are going in that direction, really, really slow. But as soon as they start walking, they lean forward, hitting the next guy and the next guy and the next guy, as you might do, just kind of tripping like that. And that causes what's called a wave. Not a physical thing, but a movement. That movement, like you would walk or you'd run, there's a wave that travels down the line and comes out the end. That's as good an explanation of what's happening with electricity that you're going to hear on the show today. Okay, so that's that. Now, you tell me, Ken, okay, how can a wave go faster than the thing that it's on? Well, if you're at the seaside and you see the waves coming in, the water's staying in the same place, it's just going up and down and up and down, but the wave itself is the movement of the water going across. Think of it like this, if you've ever seen the football stadiums during a World Cup match where they do the Mexican wave, and it goes around the stadium. The wave does, the movement does, but the actual people stay seated in their seat. They do move a little bit up and down, but they don't move along with the wave. That's enough about that. Now, can you imagine if these angry pixies are standing in the line waiting for Santa, right? And they're so close together that if at the end of the line, one of Santa's elves was pushing the pixies to the left, and then, what do we call them? Grinch is on the other side pushing them back. So when they can push one side, they push back, they push the other side, they push back. That's alternating electricity. It's Christmas Eve, give me a break. Okay. Somebody starts a career in electronics based on this show, and that image will be stuck in their head forever. Anyway, that's alternating current, basically pushing to and fro. The pixies in the middle stay more or less the same way. They move a little bit to the left and a little bit to the right, but the movement is done very fast. So fast, in fact, almost the speed of light. Actually the speed of light, as it turns out, but it's slowed down by the dielectric. Said as if he understood what that meant. Okay, we now know what AC current is. We now know what DC current is. One thing to remember is that these little pixies all in a row don't like you, and they don't like your equipment, and they're out to break it and turn it into, to release the magic smoke, yeah? So you have to be careful with it, even with DC. And during this entire series, we're going to be talking about AC, but we're not going to be messing with it, and you're not going to be taking measurements with it, and you're not going to be cutting wires with DC, with the AC. And the AC stuff is the stuff coming from the power outlet, yeah? So you're not going to be messing with that stuff. Even with DC stuff that you get from lithium-ion battery packs that you might have converted from into chargers from recycled batteries from laptops, you're not going to be messing with that stuff either. We're going to be messing with the nice, boring, cheap batteries here, yeah? And any of the electricity stuff to do with the mains voltage, that stuff will kill you in an instant and not care. And will continue to kill you, yeah? So, no messing with AC for now, at least. Where was I? Oh yeah, looking at a battery. Right, let's have a look. I'll grab my magnifying glass, bring it over to the light. What does it say? It says AA batteries. Right, well, let's have a look at what Wikipedia says about AA batteries. Hashtag, exclamation mark, WAA battery. And that brings us to Wikipedia. The AA battery, or AA battery, is a standard size of single cell dry battery. What's a dry battery, you ask? Now that is important. It is a dry cell is a type of electric battery commonly used for portable devices. Unlike wet cell batteries, which has a liquid electrolyte, dry cells use electrolytes in the form of paste and thus less susceptible to leakage. So these are electrochemical devices, and what happens is when you join one side to the other, a chemical reaction occurs that releases electricity. Makes those pixies want to walk up to Sunday, yeah? Super. So we've got a plus on one side and we've got a minus on the other side. And what that actually means is the opposite of what you think it means, because when they came up with this, they thought the electrons flowed in a different way. When I say electrons and pixies, they're interchangeable. So when the electrons flow, they actually go out the minus and come back to the plus. But by the time they discovered that piece of information, it was too late. And it actually, for the most part, doesn't really matter. So we follow electrical convention here. So the pixies, the electricity flows, and you can think it goes out the plus and comes back the minus. Well, at least the holes do. Okay, what else can we see in this? We can see something that says, AA, it's an aerosol, 1124, it's made in Germany. Not a whole lot of use to me. And it says something 1.5 volts, 1.5 V, what's that? Well, that is interesting. Volt. In Wikipedia. So a volt symbol V is used as a unit of electrical potential and electromotive force in this IS standard units. 1 volt is defined as the electrical potential between two points on a conducting wire when the electricity of current of 1 ampere dissipates 1 watt of power between the two points. Woo! Couldn't have said it better myself. What it means is how strong the pixies are. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You will hear many other definitions in your life, but that's the one that hopefully will stick with you. How strong the pixies are. Some people describe it as, say you've got water flowing. If we use the flow of water to describe electricity as an analogy for electricity, it's the head of water, how high up it is. So the higher up the water, the more electrical, the more potential energy you have that it will fall down. The lower down, the less oomph it's got. But we're going to think how pumped our pixies are here. Okay, so does that tell me then how much? So if I put these batteries back, right, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take my electric DVM, or my voltmeter, digital voltmeter. It's actually a multimeter, and it's really cheap. And I'm going to check the voltages. So I'll turn it on, and I switch it to continuity. It beeps, and then I switch it to V. Now I've got several Vs in mine. One V has got two horizontal lines. One is solid, and underneath that are like three dots. So a bit like the hamburger menu, except the top line is solid. And then underneath that, there's another section for V with a squiggly line, a bit like a wave. So one stands for, is a symbol for direct current, and the other one is a symbol for alternating current. And the reason that it's a wavy line is because AC is generated using generators. So like a turbine, like a water turbine in a dam, where a flow of water goes down, spins the turbine, generates electricity. Or in a wind turbine, where the blades of the motor turns and the turning of that generates electricity. And for example, gas turbines, where they heat up, where they use gas to heat up water to turn it into steam. High pressure goes and turns a turbine, which turns a motor, which turns magnets, which generates alternating electricity. Why is it alternating if it's spinning, you ask? Well, imagine you've got a bicycle going along. And attached to the bicycle, hypothetically, you have a marker. And the marker is pointing out the side of, you attach it in the spokes so that it's pointing out as you spin around. Ignore the fact that it has to go through the spokes here for a minute, but it spins around in a circle. And if you were to go to a... Okay, so I'm going to set it to DC. I'm going to take the batteries and check each of the batteries first. I'm going to put the black onto the bottom, which is minus. Black is traditionally known as negative, and put the red to the top, which is positive. This battery is reading 1 volt, which means it's dead as a doornail. So I'm going to get fresh batteries for the purposes of testing this. Okay, two new batteries have been acquired. And let's put them. So 1.6 volts. So it should be normally around 1.5, but when, and this one is 1.61 volts. So, but when you put them under load, they will get stressed out more. Okay, so we know that both of those batteries are more or less around 1.5 volts. So we've got two of them. Now there's two ways to wire up batteries. You can either wire them in parallel or in series. So think of your Pixies, and you've got two Pixies. Both of them are 1.5 on the Pixie scale of strength, and you are now going to have them do stuff. So you have two options. They have to move a cart for Santa with presents. So you can either push, have them line up behind the cart. So you put the first Pixie behind the cart, and that Pixie starts pushing the cart. This analogy is going to fail, but we will carry on. So if you push the Pixie pushing, so there's the same amount of power available, right? Because you've got essentially two Pixies. So how they've got the same amount of energy there. So you could push them behind, one Pixie's pushing the cart, and the weighing scales on the cart would, you know, if you're pushing weighing scales attached to the cart, it would show 1.5. But if you put another one behind and both of them are pushing against that weighing scales, you would have three showing up on the weighing scales. So the power of three Pixies, or volts as we call them. However, if you had two weighing scales side by side in the back of the cart and you had two Pixies pushing on the weighing scales, you would see that both weighing scales showed 1.5. So if you put the Pixies in parallel, you get 1.5, but you can continue for double the amount of time. If you put them behind each other, you get doubled the voltage, but they will only last as long, similar length of time. That's a bad analogy. But take another glass of mulled wine and we will continue on. Right, let's have a look here. I'm going to use another multimeter, which I'm not going to use now because the thing is just broken off. This is what's happening with the show the whole time as I do it. I've fitted those and what I need to know is how much voltage is going to come out of this thing when I turn it on. Now, I can guess, I can study and figure it out, or I can measure it. So I'm going to figure it out and see. So I've got the first battery. I'll put that in to the compartment. And I put it's, I look at it and it's got a plus and a minus on it. And I look in the battery and the battery's got a plus on one side and a minus on the other. So I put the minus, which is the bum, the black part of the Duracell battery, in, and the plus is the gold side of the Duracell battery. Now, I'm going to take those out again, actually, and I'm going to put my multimeter to continuous mode so that if electricity pixies are able to get from one side to the other side, you'll hear a beep like that. So what I'm doing is I'm now putting one connector onto the spring on one side and one connector onto the spring on the other side. Those are not connected. However, at the bottom of the battery compartment, I can see that there's a spring and a piece of flat in there. So there's going to be a positive connecting and a negative connection coming in here. So I wonder, are those joined together? I think they are because I can see it, but to be sure, I'm going to check with my multimeter. Yes, sure enough, the bottoms are connected. What does that tell us? Interesting, Sherlock. Okay, so taking out my Duracell battery here again. Doesn't have to be Duracell, but I just happen to have them. I put the black bit where it says minus, and then I put the plus, which is marked on the battery, into the connector where it says plus. Now the plus goes to the end of the battery compartment, and there's a piece of metal from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. And on the right-hand side, it goes from a flat to a spring. And that has got minus on it. So I connect the black part, the minus of the Duracell battery in there, and I put the plus in. And now I can see that the pixies, if they want to get from one side, one wire to the other at the top, they need to go down the battery to the bottom, cross over and come back. So that would be two of our pixies pushing together. So I reckon that's 1.5 plus 1.5. So together there are, if I put these wires together, it would look like I have a pixie who's as strong as three pixies. So 3 volts. So let me change my multimeter back to volts, turn it to volts 20 on the DC line. And then I connect either pin, doesn't really matter, to one side and connect the red to the other side, and I'm getting 0 volts. Now, reasons for that, because it's not turned on. So let's turn it on and do that again. I put the red to one side and then I connect the black lead of my multimeter to the other side, and I'm getting also nothing. Why is that? Interestinger and interestinger. So I will turn it off just to be on the safe side and take out the batteries again. So now we're into the realm of troubleshooting, and we're also into the realm of why this show takes so long for something that's really rather simple. And this could very well be that there's insulation still on the wire. So where it broke off, the wire is not exposed. All I'm able to access, possibly, this is a possibly, I'm guessing here, all that I'm able to access is the insulation that has been added to the front of the wire and not the wire itself. So I'm taking my wire strippers and I'm going to try and clear off the insulation on the wire. That could be quite hard to do because if it's painted on, then you know, some wire it's a plastic molding, and it's easy enough to take it off. But if it's actually epoxy or something that's put on top, then it's basically a paint that's on there that you, the only way to get rid of it actually is to, what I'm going to do now is scrape it off. So I'm going to bring that over to my cutting mat and hold it down, and then try and, holding the wire, take a few, holding the wire flat on the ground, fixed with my hand, taking a knife, a very blunt potato knife, and scraping the last probably a centimeter, or what's that in metric or in imperial, about quarter of an inch or half a centimeter, of just scraping away half a centimeter from the back, half a centimeter back to the front of the wire, and do that, try and get the insulation off. I'll try and turn it around and repeat that process, and I can kind of feel the plastic fighting me on it, but really can't see it even with a magnifying glass. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, ooh, that's ugly. It's all sorts of, you can see the cable and the copper strands of the cable, and on that we have sort of plastic dandruff would be the best word to describe it, I guess. Let me have a look. Has that helped it or hindered it? I don't know. I kept meaning to get some emery paper, or I don't know why it's called emery paper. Somebody knows? Do a show. Yeah, that one's done. I can feel at least a little bit of wire. You know, a little bit, the braid of the copper on it. The correct thing to do now will be go to the shed on a cold winter's night and get some sandpaper, but I'm not in the mood to do that. But I probably should probably end up having to do that anyway in the end. So that at least feels like I've got contact. Another thing some people do is burn it off. Let's see if that trick will work. So I will go to store. My soldering box, and in there I've got a heat tube and a small cigarette lighter. So did that work? So I tried to, yep, that burnt it off. It's a bit ugly. Other people use a solder, heated soldering iron for this as well. So let's see if we have contact. Now, one way to check that is with my continuity meter again. My voltmeter, take it out, put it into continuity mode, switch the dial over so that if there's a connection, I should hear. So now I'm checking the spring at the top, and the issue is I won't know which one is connected, whether it's positive or negative. So neither of them. I'm holding the wire on one side, and it is not making a beep to either of them, which is not good. And I'm holding a wire to the other side, and it's also not making a beep, which is also not good. There is exposed wire there, because I'm hearing it. So what's going on here? I've just noticed that there's a connector slightly down from the battery pack is a some sort of device. It could be a connection point. Maybe that's gone wrong. Anyway, forget all that. This is typical troubleshooting, and this is why the show takes so long. What we'll do is we'll put the batteries back in, because we're not going to be using this compartment. We line them up, and I will simply just attach the probes directly into the battery compartment, and then we can get a reading. So, and when I put my probes in, I'm getting a reading of 3.23 volts. 3.23 volts. Wow, that was a lot of work for a very results that we could see and we had calculated already earlier. Now, just for the fun of it, what I want to do is have a look at this other battery compartment, right? And I'll describe it to you. And while I'm going up to get a third battery, you can have a think about it, what the result will be. So I'm examining the battery compartment. It's got three battery compartments, 1, 2, and 3. So the first one has got a spring in it, and it goes down to its negative point goes to a plus point. The plus point seems to be mechanically the same piece of material that goes to the minus point of the middle cell, which is one, which says on it, on this one, 1.5 volts. So it goes down, it goes across to the springy bit, comes up to the top. Now, if I look at the top, I see that battery compartment one that we've just visited, that we've left from, is not connected to battery compartment two. The top of battery compartment two is connected to the top of battery compartment three. Battery compartment three runs down to the bottom, and that is not connected. Bottom of battery compartment three has a wire that goes all the way back and out, but it is not connected to the bottom of the other two batteries. So the battery, the power from, if you put in three pixies here side by side, each of them 1.5, one goes down, pushes behind the other one, which pushes behind the other one. So while I'm going to get the third battery, can you try and figure out what the voltage is going to be from this? And I'm back with another type of pixie from Panasonic. And this one has got a voltage of 1.61. Now, it's not good practice ever to mix batteries from different providers, different manufacturers, or indeed from different packs. So it's best to get the ones that were made at the same time. And the reason for that is they can be slightly different makeup in the chemistry, so that if one of the pixies is a little bit weaker, the other ones are pushing at it the whole time and kind of damaging it. So, but for the purposes of this, I'm going to put it in. I want to get a measurement and we'll see how it goes. So what we're doing is we're putting in plus coming out, negative to a plus, bridging over at the bottom to a minus. Minus goes up to the top. It bridges over to the plus, and the plus goes back. And now my LEDs light up. And if I put a measurement here, measuring from the spring, compartment one, to the far end at the bottom of battery compartment three, I can see that instead of 3 volts, I have 4.6 volts. So that will be 4.5. Interesting. Clap yourself on the back if you got that. Well done, because that tells us that all of these are in series. Series, they're not in parallel, they're in series. So I'm going to put that battery compartment away because it's a joke for another day. And I'm going to put the other battery compartment away as it also is a joke for another day. Now, that brings us back to our two fairy lights. So, one of those battery packs runs at 5 volts, whereas the other one runs at 3 volts. So I need to be making sure that when I take DC voltage in this, this thing needs DC voltage in order to run. And how much DC voltage? That's a very good question. Okay, changed my mind. Took out the same battery holder that we had before, and I have cut the wire off because it was attached to the string. And now what I'm doing is I'm going to check continuity on that. And I figured out what was going on with the battery holder. It actually is not just straight connected. It's got a little piece of circuitry in there that reacts to the light. And if there's any light, then it turns itself off. So when I measured it, it had 3.1 volts. So electricity is, we've learned several things. Alternating current is the pixie's moving over and back. Direct current is the pixie's walking slowly towards Santa. Strength of the pixies are the voltage. But what we also want to know is the current, how many of them are flowing through at any one time. So we can describe electricity. It's not enough to know the volts to know what's going on. It's kind of similar to looking at a river, and you need to know whether it's how big the river is the voltage, but how fast the current is flowing is the second thing. So there are three things that make up the that are related to each other in describing electricity. One is voltage. The current is potential. So voltage potential difference. That's the how strong the pixies are. Amps is how many of them are passing through at any given time. And then ohms or resistance is the constraint on it. So if you think of it from the point of view of there are pixies in a pipe and the pixies behind are trying to push the other pixies through a gap, and the gap itself is being tightened by an elf, and that elf is the resistance, and that's in ohms. The amp, the amount that's going through, is the ampage. But anyway, let's not concern ourselves with that. So if you know one, they're all related using a thing called Ohm's law. So V is equal to I over R. Voltage is equal to current multiplied by the resistance. So the amount of volts that you have available. If you know the resistance and the current, you can determine what the voltage is. If you know the voltage and the resistance, you can determine the current. And if you know the current and the voltage, you can determine the resistance. If you know the current and the resistance, you can determine the voltage. So if you have two of the three, you can determine the other one. And any two of them is enough to describe what's going on. But so in our situation here, we needed to know the voltage. And what we need to know is, so the voltage that these lights are going to light up with is 3 volts, the number 3. So what I want to do is connect it up to a USB power supply. Okay, so USB power supply, let me go to my box of USB power supplies, which is actually in the box called USB cables, but that's a problem for another day. So let's go here. What I've done is I've cleared out a whole go of, you know, older power supplies. Most phones now need 2.5 amps, and we talked about amps earlier on. Amps is current. V is equal to I over R. So the I is the amps for some strange reason. Well, there are reasons. They're named after famous people who did interesting stuff for electrical engineering. So I'm going to take this wall wart. So you plug that into your normal phone charger, and on the other side is a USB cable. Okay, and I'll put this box in here, and I'll be back to you in a second. So helpfully, this thing tells us information on the side. I think they're legally required to, or they wouldn't bother. So the input is 100-240V. So we learned about volts here earlier on. So what do you think that means? Because beside that it says, it's that squiggly symbol again, that's like a wave, 50/60 hertz. Interesting. We kind of know what volts are, and we know that it's AC. So that's telling us that it is 50, or that it is 100 or 240 volts. So this thing won't blow up if you plug it in the US, and it won't blow up if you plug it in Europe or the UK. And the 50 and 60 hertz. Hertz is frequency. Frequency means the count, how fast it goes over and back. So those pixies, the Grinch pushing against the elves using the pixies, left and right, left and right, left and right. That's the hertz. So 50 hertz or 60 hertz. So in the US, I think they use 50, and over in Europe we use 60. So that's fine. Now, it also says max 0.2A. A, did we see that before? A is amps. Amps is current. Right, okay. Then carrying on, output it says 5 volts, and instead of the squiggly sign, we have the two horizontal lines, the long one, and underneath that a dotted one, saying 1.0 amps. So this thing can take in normal mains power, and it'll give you out 5 volts DC, up to 1.0 amps. Now, the up to part, you need to think about that as how many pixies you can fit on the road, right? So if you have a big, huge motorway, what's the American word for motorway? Freeway, interstate. You can fit lots and lots of pixies there. But if you're down a boreen or a small walkway beside a canal, you might only be able to fit one. So the amount of current is determined how many pixies can you get past at any one point in time. So there we go. And the current, the maximum we can pull from this is 1 amp, which is more than enough to kill you. Okay? Goes across your heart. What happens is, inside your heart, you're basically an electrical machine yourself, and the signals to that pumping machine in your chest is done using electricity. And if you get that across your heart, it interrupts the electricity from your brain, sends the signals down to turn on, turn off, turn on, turn off. So we don't mess with electricity. Angry pixies, we don't mess with. Yeah? So generally we say you're pretty okay with DC currents, direct current. But the reason for that is because it is low power, low amps, so it's lower voltage, lower amps. You're in the milliamps, so a little thousandths of an amp, and you should be safe enough. Okay, one side of my desk I've got a charger. Guess I better take a photo of this. Let me see. Photo there. One side I have a battery power unit, so that is going to supply 3 volts. On the other one, I have something that's going to supply 5 volts. So how do I get from 3 volts down to 5 volts? So if you were doing that on an interstate, what you would probably do is put in a toll bridge, and that reduces the amount of traffic that's allowed to go past. So you tighten the road down, you put in a bit of resistance, and that's exactly what we're going to do here. And resistance, again, is part of the Ohm's law thing. Voltage on the top, V is equal to IR. So if you're not that good at maths, right, you think of V. So put your hands in the air, right? V, make a V symbol like VMCA. So two hands up, V is at the top of a triangle, yeah? And then underneath that, you've got I and R. Doesn't matter which side the I and the R are on. It's important to know that V is at the top. So if V is at the top, then, and you want to know what the current is. Current is is written as I, and it's measured in amps. It's the thing you have to learn, need to know. So what you do then is you divide voltage by the resistance, because V is at the top and R is at the bottom. If you know the resistance, V is at the top and current is at the bottom, so you can divide the current I into V. So, easy enough. That's as complicated as the maths is likely to get for you for a long while. So what we're going to do is we're going to put in a resistor in between the output of the phone charger and the string of lights. We're going to put in what's called a resistor, and what it is a piece of wire that's wound really tight, and the electrons, the pixies in this, have a real tough time going down. You get them in various different sizes, so they're made with various different resistances, they're called, and they're named after a guy called Ohm, and it is George Simon Ohm, who was a German physicist and mathematician. As a school teacher, he began his research with a new electrical cell invented by the Italian scientist Alessandro Volta. See there? See there? Using the equipment of his own creation. Let's see. And then we go to ampere. 1 ampere is equal to 1 coulomb moving past a point at a second. It is named after the French mathematician and physicist André-Marie Ampère. There you go. And Coulomb, just out of interest, is the amount of current, let me go to the explanation, and it of course is named after Charles Augustus de Coulomb. So all these units, the reason they don't bear any resemblance to their letter is that the letter was already taken up by something else, and they're named in honor of the person. So the Coulomb is an electrical charge, and it equals the number of 1 ampere, constant current, 1 voltage. So it's actually the number of electrons that pass 1 amp of current in 1 second. So when I said earlier on that the pixies are queuing for Santa, if you have a lot of pixies queuing up, it's the number of pixies that go past in 1 second if you have a current of 1 amp. And it is 6.241509 to 10 to the power of 18. So yeah, that's a big number. They don't move very slow, but there are an awful lot of them, and they're very angry. Okay, so what are we going to do? We're going to put in a resistor. And a resistor is a passive two-terminal electrical component that implements electrical resistance as a circuit element. In electronic circuits, resistors are used to reduce the current flow, adjust signal levels to divider voltage, bias active elements, blah, 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 blah. Their symbol is two lines coming out of a rectangular box. Okay, where was I? Yeah, so I'm going to use one of them. You can get them for peanuts from China. If you can't, have a look at any older electrical equipment and you'll be able to salvage them from there. But we need to know the resistance. We need to know what value of a resistor we're going to put in here to basically slow the pixies down from 5, that will be traveling at 5 volts, down so that they'll be traveling equivalent to 3 volts using the same amount of current. And if it's not obvious at this point, I'm not an electrical engineer, I'm a mechanical engineer, and this sort of stuff has been a struggle for me all my life. I went from doing mechanical engineering course first 3 years to doing the first 2 years, and then the final 3 years of my degree was in a different location, and I streamed in where they assumed that you had the knowledge of the first 2 years, and I really missed that. So here I am teaching this more to myself than to you guys. And if anybody else out there has got a better explanation or a better way to describe this, please do a show, because we need this for our amateur radio show. So this has been going on a long time. I'm not going to edit it, but I still haven't done what I needed to do. So I'm going to continue on now. Right, I need to figure out what resistor to use. So if the two batteries were in series, they would produce 3 volts, and they do. So I now have one part of my triangle, which is 3. I need to find out what the resistor is. So therefore, I need to know the values of V, and I need to know the values of I. So the resistor I need. So as the electricity goes around the circuit, it goes from 3 volts on one side to 0 volts on the other. And that's called dropping the voltage. So all those LED lights use up 3 volts of electricity. But I have 5 volts coming in, so I need to put something in between that it uses up the difference between the 5 volts and the 3 volts. So that's 2 volts. I need a resistor that will use up 2 volts of electricity so that not too many pixies are hitting my LED lights. Okay, so the thing about DC electricity is it goes from the positive to the negative. It goes round in a loop, and it has to have a closed loop, a little circuit that we call it, in order for it to work. If there's a break in the circuit, the little pixies can't move from one side to the other, the electrons can't move from one side to the other, so therefore we don't have a complete circuit. So one direction we call positive, the other direction we call negative. It's arbitrary, don't overly worry about it. The negative is actually the directions that the pixies go, because they're all grumpy. But if you're looking at circuit diagrams, you'll see the arrow going the other way from positive to negative. It doesn't actually much matter so long as you know about this. So I'm going to I've got my unit here, and I'm going to quickly, the battery compartment is here with the batteries inside it. And the thing I noticed is that it doesn't work unless the light is off. So I've got some black electrical tape here, and I'm going to very quickly put back the screws in the compartment. And you have no idea how much time I lost on this project as a result of that little misstep. I'm putting the screws back into the battery compartment, so I have a battery compartment. Because I want to be able to measure the current in this. So in order to pick the resistor, I need to know how much current these LEDs take up. Most power supplies, either batteries or the wall units, will try to push as much current as they can, whereas the other devices are not able to handle it. So you need to be able to control the amount of current going through at any one time. And I have black electrical tape here, and I'll just cover a few strips at the front. So I now need to check and see if the direction is correct. And I do that by just connecting up really quickly. Another great way of doing it is getting a small single cell little battery. The CR320s, 3220s, those ones. And putting it one way or the other, that they have so little current, so they have so little power or strength, that are not going to damage your circuit. So in this case, I know which one is positive and I know which one is negative. So that is great, because I measured it on the battery. On the multimeter, I put it to volts. And if you put it on the multimeter, I'll just do that again. I'll switch it to the volt section. I'll switch it to voltage DC. I got my unit is supplying power. I get my black lead and I get my red lead, and I pick arbitrary sides. So one side is connected to black, the other side is connected to red. So I'm seeing minus 3.2 volts. What that tells me is that the red is connected to the wrong side, and it's reporting that the pixies are going the wrong way, the electrons are going the wrong way. So I know that this side here is the negative and this side here is the positive. So what I'm going to do is switch them around and just measure them again, and now it's positive. So on the one that I held to the black lead, I'm going to take a tiny little bit of black insulating tape and just put it on there for a marker so that I know that I'm connecting up the wires correctly. So I'm going to connect on to the LEDs. I'm just twisting the LED wires around each other and they should light up, but they're not lighting up. Why is that? So they weren't lighting up. Now I'm connecting them the other way around and quickly tapping them to see if they light. And yes, they do. Yes, they do. But at the end, it's very flaky because of there's still insulation on both sides. So not a great connection. I'm going to go and get some sandpaper from the shed and I'll be back in a bit. Okay, got some sandpaper, scraped those off. The connections are a lot better because the insulation's gone off them. So now I have them lighting up with the original battery pack. This is more work than I thought it should be. The majority of this is I'm stringing this out. I have no idea why I want to tell so much stuff, and I don't feel I'm an expert. But anyway, we will continue on. So now I've got this connected up using the original battery supply. I'm going to split the circuit there, and I'm going to put my multimeter into the circuit so it can tell me how many electrons, pixies, are walking past on the circuit. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch it from volts, the red lead from volts, to milliamps, and I'm going to switch it to 20m. Let's see if that's a good start. And in this case, the black and the red of the multimeter don't really matter, because what's happening is the current will be coming out, the electricity will be coming out of the battery, going down one lead into the multimeter and out the other. And as it goes past, it passes what's called a current shunt, and the multimeter will be able to determine how much voltage is going past there, and then by using Ohm's law internally, it's able to tell us how much current. So I'm going to hold that there, and I'm going to hold that here, and now the lights light up, and I'm showing zero on my one on my multimeter, which means this is not an auto-leveling multimeter, so it means that the amount of current going through is more than it can display on the unit. So I switch it up to 200 milliamps, so that's 1000 amps. So the display is now showing 98 up to, and it varies up to 102 milliamps. So what we can say is that 100 milliamps is flowing through that cable. 100 milliamps is flowing through the cable. I'll just make note of that. So does that seem right? Is that correct? So what I've done is I've gone and counted each of the LEDs in turn, and they all together will be using some of this current. So if we divide the number of LEDs by their total number, we get the amount that each one individually is using. So they're using 0.005 of an amp each, which means they're using 500 microamps or 0.5 of a milliamp. So quite often in electronics, milliamps are used. So they're using half a milliamp. That seems very little to me, but gone over to the EEV blog forum, and they say that these type of LEDs use between 0.1 and 1 milliamps. So 0.5 is smack bang right in the middle there. Okay, great. However, what we need is the total current. So that's the one we're interested in. And that is already, as I said, 0.022 amps. So we need to know what sort of resistor we're going to get in order to drop those 2 volts. So we use Ohm's law to determine what the resistor is. V is on the top. V is for victory. You've climbed to the top of the mountain. V is for victory, but in 2. And then we divide that by 0.022 amps, and the answer is we get a 90 ohm resistor. So 2 volts divided by this, it gives us a 90 ohm resistor. Very good. So I look at my parts drawer, and I know there's going to be no 90 ohm resistors, but what there are going to be is 100 ohm resistors, which is close enough. When you're doing resistors, the bigger is probably better. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to put this resistor in line with the positive end of the connector coming out of the USB. I'm going to wire it through my voltmeter as well, and I'm going to confirm all these calculations work in real life. So I've just done that. I put in the USB connector PCB. It's basically a USB connector, and it's got a small printed circuit board that comes out with place for 4 holes, 2 of which I'm interested in, which are the voltage positive and the negative. Positive and the negative. Negative is usually called ground. So those come out of the battery pack. And I've got the 100 ohm resistor tied around the negative or the positive lead that goes out to crocodile clip through my voltmeter and then back to the lights. Now the lights light up, and they're showing that I've got 2.6 volts coming out, and I've got 200 milliamps. So a little less voltage and a little less current. So, but all in all, the current should be around about the same, so that's the same regardless of what I did. But the amount of voltage being dropped has meant that there's 2 volts being dropped on that little resistor. So that is pretty much that. Now what I need to do is take my voltmeter out of the way and tidy this up, solder it, and have it ready to rock by tomorrow. So let me do that now. First thing first, I'll disconnect the USB connector, And now this is where I need to make sure that I don't mix up the ground and the positive and negative. Okay, let's get our soldering gear out, which we have here. I don't actually have heat shrink that's big enough to go around a USB connector. So what I think I'll do is I'll get an old USB lead that's I'm not using and just cut it, and you just strip the wires and join the wires, but instead of using this PCB thing. This PCB thing's handy for testing. So I'll take a photo of that because I can attach crocodile clips to it. But for this purpose of this, I just want it on a USB lead, and my heat shrink will... heat shrink, by the way, is like a plastic tube that's double the size. So you put it over the wires, and then when you want to seal your electrical connection, you heat it up, and then it shrinks down to half its size, and it's like forms insulation on the outside of wires that you have stripped. And you've stripped them because you've needed to strip them because of the you needed to make electrical contact with them. So that's what that is. So I've got a sacrificial USB cable which I'm going to cut. I cut that at the end. So I've taken the head off, so I've got the male connector, the type A connector on one side, or let's call it the bit that usually fits into a PC. So some USB cables, they have two wires, so they're power cables, and some have only one. Some have four for data. This one is a cheap cable and it's data only. It's only for charging. So that actually suits me absolutely fine in this case because that's what I want. So I'm going to cut one of these short, as I said. I'm going to cut one of them long. Now, the first thing I need to do is to... Where's the end of my... string of lights has just fallen on the floor. Something that it's been doing the whole time. So put a weight on that. Now, thing you always forget to do is put on heat shrink. So that's something we're not going to do here. We're not going to forget this time. I'm just marking the positive with red Sharpie and the negative with black, so I don't forget it. Now, it is difficult to know on a these cheap cables from places, you can't be really sure if they're wired up. You know, the black is positive and white is negative, which is the convention, or possibly red is positive. This one has a pink cable and a white cable. So rather than take the word for it, I'm guessing that white is negative and that pink is positive, but you do not know. So I'm going to pop it into the tester really quick and check my hypothesis. So I'm putting the pink onto the red and the white onto the black. And yeah, 2.7 volts. So the white is black, is negative. So let me just mark that. I don't actually have a red Sharpie. I just have a black HEMA pen, which will do. So now, what are we forgetting, Kev? We're forgetting to put on the heat shrink because that is what you always do, forget to put on the heat shrink. So I'm gonna put on a nice big piece of outer sleeving to cover both. And that will go down over both. I'll put photos of this into the show notes. And it's taking its time. And then on the other cable, I'll put the smaller heat shrinking tube. Let's see what size. Yeah, that size seems about right. And I'll take out two reasonably generous pieces of that. Put back your heat shrink tube. So I'll put a smaller one on the fairy light side. And I have the larger one to cover up these two on the other side. And I've got my resistor in the middle. And let me make a quick photo of this, whether I'll use that one or not. Now, I will turn on my soldering iron, for which I will need a plug. Soldering iron is on. Do I have a plan? Yes, I'm going to take the two black leads I have heat shrink on, and I'm going to twist them together like that, and then I'm going to basically put a blob of solder on that. So my iron is heated up. I'll look on HBR for Mr. X's show on soldering. It's still not warm enough to melt my solder, but it is now. So I'll bring it to the tip to the solder, or to the wires, hold it on the wires, bring in some solder and remove it. It takes the tiniest little bit, hold it for a second and then move it away. That's it, done. That's that one done. And then the question is about the positive. So I'm putting the resistor on the positive side. I don't think it pretty much matters which side you put it on, so long as you do. I'm going to twist on one leg of the resistor. It also, with a resistor, doesn't actually matter which way you point it. Some components, LEDs for example, have to be pointed the correct way. So that's called polarity. So I've twisted on one leg of the resistor, and I'm going to bring over my soldering iron again, put on some solder, clean it off, bring it over to the twisted wires, put it on the twisted wires, let it heat up the twisted wires a bit, and then bring my solder in from the other side, touch it, it melts, comes. Basically it's just metal gluing, and then run my solder up, and a bit of smoke comes off. That's the resin, which is there to protect to stop the joint from getting oxidized. As it melts, the oxygen from the air comes in and attacks it, but the resin keeps the oxygen away so it doesn't get damaged. Okay, so that's one side soldered. The other side is hugely farther away. So I'll modify the cable a little bit, stretch it down so that they're more or less together. This is fierce, exciting stuff. And now I'm going to... I've cut the wire, pink wire, a lot shorter. And I'm just going to strip it with my stripping tool. Twist the cables on that. Make sure the resistor is more or less in place. And then I'm just going to... oopsie, a bit tricky. Wire... and the resistor and the cable together. So this other foot of the resistor is wound to the cable. I'll just wind that back again. The solder, when it's done, will make a good mechanical joint as well, so I'm not that particularly worried about it, but I just want it out of the way. The legs on these resistors are quite long. Okay, so that's it. There's actually in total three solder joints to be made on this. Two of them are one on one side and two on the other side of the resistor. So it gives you an idea how much soldering there is to be done. So I will again repeat, rinse and repeat, same procedure that we had before. Soldering iron's hot. Where did I put my solder? Yep. I bring the solder over to the twisted wires, leave it there for a second to heat up the wires. Then from the other side, bring in the solder itself, and then it melts and goes up. Yeah, you can see it wicks, as I say, it's absorbed, it wicks into the wires, and then you know you have a good joint. And leave that for a second to cool. People say don't blow on it, but there you go. So let me tidy up my mess here a little bit. And I can turn off the soldering iron. You will get burnt with a soldering iron. It's just a matter of fact. It's not a question of when. It will happen. But, you know, you'll survive. Don't worry about it. So let's have a look here at the... Okay, I've just made a photo of the setup. And in that photo, you can see the voltmeter that I used. And it's currently set into the volts DC position. Then the battery pack with the USB connector, the power supply that I intend to use, some example LED light sets with a 2-battery component and a 3-battery component. The one with the insulation tape is the one that we've been using during this epic. And of course, what are the little cable that I've plugged in just before I do the heat shrinking on it. So that's where we are at this point. And the next thing to do is plug it in and see if it works. And yes, it does. I had a moment of terror there because my battery pack, it's taking so little current that the battery pack turns off. So I'm now going to try it on a wall wart and see how we get on. Right, plug it in. And it lights up. And does it stay lighting up? Yes, it does. Houston, we have success. Okay, the only other thing to do now is to do the heat shrink. Unfortunately, I happen to have a heat shrinking tool for that very purpose. Now, it's essentially a hot air gun. So what I'll do is, you can use a hot air gun or you can use, for example, a cigarette lighter. So I'll go the cigarette lighter approach here for now, and as that's simply going to give me more control of where I put the heat, you put it underneath it, hold it a bit away so the flame doesn't touch the heat shrink, and the heat shrink shrinks. And as it does, that's that. Now actually I'm going to get the heat gun because I much prefer it over the... It's basically a paint stripper heat gun is what that is, so it's hugely overkill for this job. But there you go, I think it's really hot. Now cool it off. And then I pull down the other heat shrink. And I'll heat shrink all of that. And of course, the LEDs go flying across the floor. So that's it, point of no return. Plug it in and it works. Phew, for a quick second it didn't work. So that's it, everybody. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.